Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how do you get rid of a dybbuk? That may be an unfair question because right now some of you might be asking, what on earth is a dybbuk anyway? Well, I'll tell you what it is, and later in the program you'll learn how to get rid of one. But first, you may be wondering why we're having a special Halloween program anyway. After all, the word itself, Halloween, has its origins in the Catholic Church. It comes from a contracted corruption of All Hallows' Eve. November 1st, All Hallows' Day, or All Saints' Day, is a Catholic day of observance in honor of saints. But in the 5th century B.C., in Celtic Ireland, summer officially ended on October 31st. The holiday was called Samhain, the Celtic New Year. One story says that on that day, the disembodied spirits of all those who had died throughout the preceding year would come back in search of living bodies to possess for the next year. It was believed to be their only hope for the afterlife. The Celts believed all laws of space and time were suspended during this time, allowing the spirit world to intermingle with the living. Naturally, the still living did not want to be possessed. So on the night of October 31st, villagers would extinguish the fires in their homes to make them cold and undesirable. They would then dress up in all manner of ghoulish costumes and noisily parade around the neighborhood, being as destructive as possible in order to frighten away spirits looking for bodies to possess. By now you might be asking yourselves, "No, so what does all this spirit stuff have to do with us?" Well, Jewish folklore has its spirits too, so we thought that this would be a perfect time to invite one of them to our program. The figure of the dybbuk comes from Eastern European Jewish folklore and refers to the restless spirit of someone who has died, which then possesses a living person. The word itself comes from the Hebrew word for clinging, and its first appearance was in a story published in 1602. According to belief, a soul which has not been able to fulfill its function in its lifetime is given another opportunity to do so in the form of a dybbuk. Dybbuks appear in various Jewish folk tales, but the most famous one is in the 1920 play written by Solomon Ansky. In fact, the dybbuk is probably the most famous Yiddish play of all time. It's been translated into many languages and was made into a film in Yiddish in 1934, and even used as inspiration for an opera. As a Halloween treat, the English Corner is presenting a reading of scenes from Ansky's play. Our actors are Kate Seeley and Richard Carlo. Both live in Madrid and are active members of the Madrid Players, the oldest permanent English-language theater group here. Richard has also acted with the Volksbühne Yiddish Theater in New York. Our special thanks to them both, and we hope you enjoy the show. The first act of the play takes place in the synagogue in Brinitz. Several students are discussing miracles that have been performed by wonder workers from their hometowns. They also talk about how Sender, a wealthy man, has been away looking for a suitable husband for his only daughter, Leah. He has already rejected 3 prospects because they didn't have enough money or he didn't like their families. We also meet Honan, a student from another town who has been living in Sender's house. Honan has been delving into the mysticism of the Kabbalah and puts forth a theory which horrifies his companions. He says that since God created Satan and Satan created sin, there is a spark of holiness in sin. So instead of waging war against sin, it should be purified, leaving only its aspect of holiness. We also discover that Honan and Leah are in love with each other. Meanwhile, Sender finally returns having found a bridegroom for Leah. When Honan hears this, he is shattered. He falls to the ground, dead. The whole town is preparing for the wedding. As is the custom, the poor are invited to a feast, and all the women dance with the bride-to-be. Leia's grandmother, Freyda, speaks with her.
You're as white as a sheet, Leia. You didn't tire yourself, did you?
They took me in their arms. They surrounded me, pressed themselves upon me, reached for me with their cold, dry fingers. My head swam. I grew faint. Then someone lifted me high into the air and carried me far, far away.
Leia, look how they've creased and stained your dress. What will you do now?
If you leave the bride alone before the wedding, demons come and carry her off.
What kind of talk is this, Leia? You mustn't mention those dark spirits by name. They lie hidden and waiting in every nook and cranny. They hear everything. They see everything. And they wait for someone to utter their forbidden name. Then they leap out and hurl themselves upon him. Tu.
They are not evil.
You must not believe them. If you believe one of that kind, he becomes uncontrollable and may do you some mischief.
Grandma, we're surrounded not by evil spirits, but by the souls of people who died before their time. It is they that watch and listen to everything we do and say.
God help you, child. What are you saying? Souls? What souls? The untarnished souls of the pure fly up to heaven and repose in the brightness of paradise.
No, Grandma. They're among us. Grandma, a person is born to live a very long life. And if he dies before his time, what happens to his unlived life? To his joy and his sorrow? To the thoughts he was not given time to think? To the deeds he was not given time to do? What happens to the children he was not given time to have? Where does that all go? Where? There lived a man, a young man, who had a lofty soul and a deep mind. A long life lay before him. And suddenly, in an instant, his life was cut off. And strangers came to bury him in a strange grave. What happened to the rest of his life? To his words that were silenced? To his prayers that were cut off? Grandma, when a candle blows out, it can be lit again, and it burns till the end. How then can the unconsumed candle of a life be put out forever? How can that be?
You must not think about such things, my child. The Lord knows what he's doing, and we're blind. We know nothing. Nothing.
No, Grandma. No human life goes to waste. If someone dies before his time, his soul returns to the world to live out the span of his years, to finish the undone deeds, to feel the unfelt joys and sorrows. Grandma, you once told me that at midnight the dead come to the synagogue to pray. Why would they come, if not to finish the prayers they had no time to say? My mother died before her time. She had no time to live out all that she was destined to do. Today, I will go to the graveyard and invite her to join my father in leading me to the wedding canopy. And she will come, and afterwards she will dance with me. And so it is with all the souls that left the world before their time. They are among us, but we do not see them. We do not feel them. Grandma, If you want to very much, you can see them, hear their voices, understand their thoughts. I know. I know.
The next act takes place in the town of Miropolia. Sender has brought Leia to see Reb Azrielka, the wonder-working Rebbe of Miropolia, because just before her wedding, she started to run around wild-eyed and speak with a strange masculine voice. She has been possessed by a Dybbuk. Reb Azrielka speaks with Sender to try to determine who the Dybbuk is and why it has possessed his daughter.
Has the Dybbuk been asked who he is and why he's taken possession of your daughter?
He did not answer. But some say they have recognized him as a student of our yeshiva, who some months ago died quite suddenly in the synagogue. He was meddling with the Kabbalah and came to grief.
By what powers?
They say by evil spirits. Some hours before his death, he told a fellow student that one should not wage war against sin, and that in evil, heaven protect us, there's a spark of holiness.
You knew him?
Yes, he ate regularly at my house.
Did you perhaps in any way cause him grief or shame? Try to remember.
I don't know. I don't remember. Rebbe, I'm only human, after all.
Bring in the girl. Dybbuk, I command you to say who you are.
Rebbe of Miropolia, you know who I am. But I do not wish to reveal myself before others.
I do not ask your name. I ask, who are you?
I am one of those who sought new roads.
Only he seeks new roads who has lost the right one.
That road is too narrow.
That was said by one who did not return. Why did you enter into this maiden?
I am her destined bridegroom.
Our holy Torah forbids the dead to abide among the living.
I am not dead.
You departed from our world, and you are forbidden to return to it until the great ram's horn is sounded. Therefore, I command you to leave the body of this girl so that a living branch of the eternal tree of Israel may not wither and die.
Rebbe of Miropolia, I know how powerful you are. I know you can command the angels and the seraphim, but you cannot sway me. I have nowhere to go. For me, every road is blocked, every gate is shut, and everywhere evil spirits lie in wait to consume me. There's heaven and earth. There are worlds without number, but not in a single one is there a place for me. And now that my anguished and harried soul has found a haven, you wish to drive me forth. Have pity. Do not conjure or compel me.
Wandering soul, I feel great pity for you, and I will try to release you from the destroying angels. But you must leave the body of this girl.
I will not leave.
Dybbuk, soul of one who left our world, in the name and with the authority of a holy congregation of Jews, I, Azrielka ben Hadas, command you to leave the body of the maiden Leia Baschana, and in leaving, not to harm her nor any other living creature. If you do not obey my command, I will proceed against you with anathema and excommunication, with all the powers of exorcism, and with the whole might of my outstretched arm. If, however, you obey my command, I will do all in my power to reclaim your soul and drive off the spirits of evil and destruction that surround you.
I do not fear your anathemas and excommunications, and I do not believe in your assurances. There is no power in the world that can help me. There is no more exalted height than my present refuge, and there is no darker abyss than that which awaits me. I will not leave.
In the name of Almighty God, I charge you for the last time and command you to leave. If you do not, I excommunicate you and give you over into the hands of the destroying angels.
In the name of Almighty God, I am joined with my destined bride, and I will not part from her forever.
Reb Azrielka tells Sender that a long-deceased friend of his, Nissen ben Rivka, has appeared to the city's rabbi 3 times in dreams, and he summons Sender to a trial to answer Nissen's charges. Sender, frightened, agrees. Reb Azrielka then proceeds to explain to Sender what his old friend has told the city's rabbi.
Nissen ben Rivka claims that both of you pledged that if your wives should conceive and bear children, the one a girl, the other a boy, the children would wed.
Yes, it was so.
Nissen ben Rivka states further that his son came to the city where you live and entered your house and sat at your table, and his soul was united with the soul of your daughter. But you were rich, and Nissen's son was poor, and you turned your gaze from him and sought other matches for your daughter among families of wealth and station. And Nissen saw how his son was plunged into despair and went wandering off into the world seeking new ways. And the powers of blackness, perceiving the despairing youth, spread their nets for him, and captured him, and took him from the world before his time. And his soul wandered homelessly, until it entered as a dibbuk into the body of its destined bride. Sender Ben-Henya, do you understand the charges of this deceased Nissen Ben-Rivka? What have you to say in your defense?
I cannot open my mouth, and I have no words for my defense. But I beg my old comrade to spare me my child, for I did nothing out of ill will. Soon after our vow, Nissen departed, and I did not know whether his wife even bore a child, whether it was a boy or a girl. Then I learned that he had died. Further news of his family, I had none, and gradually I forgot.
Why did you not inquire? Why did you not investigate?
I do not know.
Nissen ben Rivka declared that deep in your heart you recognized his son, and therefore you were afraid to ask who he was. You sought for your daughter a life of riches and of ease, and therefore you thrust his son into the abyss. This just tribunal has heard the facts, and now delivers its verdict as follows. Sender should give away half his wealth to the poor, and Nissen ben Rivka should forgive Sender with full forgiveness, and it further asks him to command with the full authority of a father that his son leave the body of the maiden Leah Baschana, so that a branch of the fruitful tree of Israel may not wither. And for that, the Almighty will manifest his grace to Nissen ben Rivka and to his homeless son. Do you both accept the verdict?
Sender accepts the verdict, but Nissen does not. Since Nissen did not forgive Sender, when Reb Azrielka tries to expel the Dybbuk with the help of the spirits, it refuses to leave Leah's body. Reb Azrielka is finally forced to take terribly extreme measures and excommunicates the spirit from all of the Jewish community. The spirit finally submits and agrees to leave Leah's body, and Reb Azrielka revokes the excommunication. The wedding is hastily prepared, but before the bridegroom arrives, Leah, left alone, hears Honan's voice.
I hear your voice, but I cannot see you.
A forbidden circle surrounds you.
Your voice sounds as sweet to me as the weeping of a violin on a silent night. Tell me, who are you?
I have forgotten. Only in your thoughts can I remember myself.
I remember now. My heart was drawn to you as to a bright star. On silent nights, I have shed sweet tears. And always in my dreams, I saw a figure. Was that you?
It was.
I remember now. Your hair was soft, and it glistened as though with tears, and your eyes were sad and gentle. Long and slender were your fingers. Oh, day and night I thought of you. But you went away, and my light was put out, and my soul withered. And like a desolate widow I was, when a strange man approached. Then you returned, and in my heart bloomed a life of death and a joy of sorrow. Why have you forsaken me again?
I broke all barriers. I surmounted death. I defied the laws of the ages and generations. I struggled with the strong, the mighty, the merciless. And when the last spark of my strength was burned out, I departed from your body to return to your soul.
Return to me, my bridegroom, my husband. I will carry you in death in my heart. And in the dreams of night, we will rock to sleep our unborn babes. We will sew them clothes to wear and sing them lullabies. Bayou, babies dead, without clothes, without a bed. Unborn children, never mine, lost forever, lost in time. They come to lead me to the canopy with a stranger. Come to me, my bridegroom.
I have departed from your body. I come to your soul.
The barrier that hems is broken. I see you, my bridegroom. Come to me.
Come to me.
I'm coming.
I'm coming.
A great light flows about me, and I am joined with you, my destined bridegroom. Together, we will soar higher, higher, higher.
When Reb Azrielka and the wedding guests arrive, it is too late. Well, we hope you enjoyed this special Halloween program. I'd like to thank our actors, Kate Seeley and Richard Carlo, again for their participation. And as always, we'd really like to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. In keeping with the mood of this week's program, I'll leave you now with Ghost from the Klezmatic CD, Rise Up. See you next week.